Who's bending down to give me a rainbow? Everyone knows it's the 95 BFM Small Top 10. Take it away, Amelia.
Beautiful.
I think Lachlan should do an entire version of Windy.
Oh, I would love that. In a kind of like a William Shatner spoken style.
Yeah.
I can maybe make that. Oh, I could maybe make that happen. Okay.
So you can
All right.
Great power comes great responsibility. I think it's your responsibility, Amelia.
Lachlan's really filled a niche in the voicings. The other day I showed a script to someone and they're like, oh, it's a Lachlan.
Ah.
And it was, without any prompting for the production team. So, I am joined this evening by the wonderful Sarah, host of the Saturday 2 to 4.
Hello.
Oh, and the rest of the ad is here as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, golly.
Yikes.
I met a lovely young child once who had memorized the ad that you wrote, Amelia, and the pair of you voiced, Kedia and Amelia, who, while they were camping, was offered some bacon by their caregiver and yelled at them, "I'm cutting the bacon in
half!" Oh, my gosh.
If you don't know what we're referring to, Amelia wrote the promo for my Saturday 2 to 4 show, and it's very funny.
I was told that I was allowed to do whatever I liked. And so
she's not lying.
It's a LARPing ad with a Bible reference. Fun.
I got what I asked for.
So
apparently I'm also Ben Zamba because of that ad, which is great. And apparently people have come up to me being like, "That's a great ad." And he's like, "What? I don't know what you're talking about." And then we chatted about it. And he's like, "Yeah, you do a good impersonation of me." And I was like, okay.
But you weren't deliberately impersonating him.
I was just like, I'm going to do a voice. Can't actually do the voice again. So,
So Sarah, I was actually straight out lying before about what your top 10 was going to be.
Possibly.
Because, of course, I don't reveal it that early on. The astute listener would know that already. Now, what is the... I'm going to fade the music down so you can give a big announce for the true topic of your small top 10.
It would cause a bit of a work coup if I were to do my top 10 BFM DJs because I am also the program director at 95 BFM, and I would possibly lose my job. I think that would be bad faith management if I were to play favourites. And originally when Amelia and I spoke, it was going to be top 10 Muppets. I am a child of the Muppets. I was raised on the Muppet Show. It's
fair.
I will take that as a compliment, regardless of the way it was intended. It's possibly the piece of pop culture that has the most formative influence on my life, no joke. But choosing between the Muppets would be like choosing between BFM DJs. I couldn't do it. So I have picked my top 10 Muppet shows.
Oh!
And as there is usually a song that goes with the small top 10, both Amelia and Kitty went, What's your song? Is it Dance Magic Dance? Is it Rainbow Connection? I went, no, it's the Muppet Show. And for a true Muppet fan, the canon is The Muppet Show. That's five seasons of The Muppet Show played in the late 70s, early 80s.
Fake fan.
Yeah.
You like Muppet Treasure Island. Fake fan.
So this excludes the movies, which I also love, but they are
not as much.
Yeah, not as much.
Okay, fair.
Were they on PBS at all, Muppets?
So the weird thing with the Muppets... See, Amelia's going to have to wrap me up
I think we're going to need to do at least one of the entries before we get into the history of the show.
I was very interested in
This is interesting, though. 10.
Okay.
We're gonna start with Lou Rawls.
Ooh.
So Lou Rawls appears on season 2 of The Muppets. This is in 1977.
At the height of Lou Rawls' powers.
Pretty much. He appears on a couch with Kermit at one point, and Kermit asks him, "Can you teach me how to sing with soul? Because I just sound I sound adenoid and I can't seem as cool as you do, Lou." And of course, the lesson is an abject failure. But I'm going to play you the beginning of the Lou Rawls episode because this, you know, it's her first, it's number 10. It sets the tone. Also, I think the writing of The Muppet Show has influenced every single piece of screenwriting I've ever done in my dumb career.
We'll find out what Sarah's screen wrote off. Yeah. But,
Yeah.
All right.
We'll start with number 10. Going easy. This is the beginning of the Lou Rawls episode of The Muppet Show. There's a knock on the door. Scooter, who is the assistant director of the Muppet Theatre, says, Lou Rawls, seconds to curtain, Lou Rawls. Sam the American Eagle is in Lou Rawls' dressing room talking about how much of a fan he is. And I won't ruin the ending for you.
All right.
Lou Rawls? Oh, Lou Rawls? 24 seconds to curtain, Mr. Rawls.
Thank you, Scooter.
Mr. Rawls, I wanted to tell you that I greatly respect your talent and I've followed your career from its very beginning.
Thank you, Sam.
It's just too bad it has to end here.
It's the Muppet Show with our very special guest star, Mr. Lou Rawls.
So this is typical of The Muppet Show in a way that it kind of lost in later years. It's super disrespectful to the guest, to any kind of propriety. The show was, Jim Henson himself is an American. He tried to get it made in America. He thought it would be interesting for kids and adults alike. Every network looked at him and went, what, you mean puppets? Like Punch and Judy. That but sounds like the stupidest thing ever.
Surely after the massive success of Super Mario Nation, everyone was ready for puppets.
No. And so he had to take his American crew of very close friends, like Frank Oz, who you hear there playing Sam the American Eagle, and take them to England to get it made because America didn't want a bar of it.
I did not know that.
And so if you were a guest star in the early seasons of The Muppet Show, it also meant you had to agree to fly to London, be in the show that you had no idea whether they were going to make fun of you. So in the early seasons, it's a lot of people who have a really healthy sense of fun and basically taking the piss out of themselves. So Lou Rawls performed some of his greatest hits. He's a total gentleman. I don't know. I just love The Muppet Show. Can you tell?
Yeah, we've really humanized the icon Lou Rawls this evening, which is one thing I didn't realize we were going to do, and I'm happy.
He sings Groovy People. He sings You're the One. But we're moving on now.
Yeah, sorry.
So
you said that I had
nine,
to rush you, so I'm just,
no,
I'm just going
do.
For
I
the
I could
stance.
Be here all bloody night. Number 9 is Paul Simon.
So, I have seen.
Yeah.
I'm not a total. What do you call someone who doesn't know anything about the Muppets?
A dweeb.
A deck. I'm not a total deck. I've seen some of the Muppets, and the Paul Simon one is a whole situation.
It's a total situation because when I watched it as a small child, you go, oh wow, Paul Simon has a really keen sense of taking the piss out of himself. Turns out the writers of The Muppet Show were well aware of Paul Simon's reputation for being a really nasty piece of work.
Yeah,
so they wrote this script in which he comes into The Muppet Show and he thought he was being this, you know, adding another string to his bow, being this great actor. But they wrote the script in where he comes in, Gonzo the Great, who's a Muppet puppet if you're not au fait, is inspired to start songwriting because he loves Paul Simon so much, and he turns up and he plays Paul Simon a song, and because he's such a fan, it's a little bit too homage-y, it's a little bit of a rip-off. And so Paul Simon goes, right, well, nobody rips me the fuck off. What do you love the most, Gonzo? And he's like, oh, well, of course I love Camilla. I love my chicken girlfriend. So Paul Simon steals Gonzo's chickens. And he steals them with the power of song and then walks around the Muppet Theatre being like, what? I didn't do anything. And then years later, I found out he did exactly the same thing to Ladysmith Black Mambazo in the Graceland album. Mm. Just like the Muppet Show writers were genius. They were taking the piss out of musicians in a way that the savvy ones realized and played along with. And Paul
so
Simon,
do you think Paul Simon think... just went in there and he was just like, ah... I'm really showing off my acting chops by playing a dick.
And I also think he went, of course, if someone plagiarizes my music, I'm going to steal their girlfriend.
Of course. He was like, well, this is all very understandable. And of course the hero of the story would act
it's
in this
me.
Way.
Yes. And so then Gonzo being the great, he decides, well, fuck chickens. I'm into asparagus now. And starts of cultivating course. Asparagus. And then because Paul Simon just won't let it go.
Gonzo sounds like Bridge.
Gonzo's amazing. Got a little bit like Bridge. And then Paul Simon steals his asparagus as well. And then at the end of the episode, you see him talking to the Swedish chef saying, you know what, I'd really like you to make me a dish that involves chicken and asparagus. And then you're like, shit, you're going to fucking eat awesome. It's the biggest trick that a quasi-kid show ever pulled, was showing Paul Simon's true colours.
I mean, yeah, and especially with the hindsight of all of the Graceland stuff. Which
totally.
The more you look into Graceland, the more it's like, he didn't just like break a bunch of like embargoes on South Africa. He stole music from like randos.
Yeah.
And like, just like bands that he'd toured with are like suing him, being like, "This, I wrote this song." He changed the lyrics to be about Al. Like,
and I don't know how much of it is you know, mythology, but as the rumor goes, a representative of Ladysmith Black Mambazo calls him up on the phone and says, "Hey, so our royalty checks for this huge Billboard Top 100 album,
yeah,
when are they going to come through?" And apparently he laughed and hung up the phone. Also, my other favorite Paul Simon myth: broke up with Art Garfunkel by writing "Goodbye Frank Lloyd Wright," making him sing it. Art Garfunkel was an architect. So he wrote a song about saying goodbye to an architect and then made his best friend sing it and then went, "P.S., I'm leaving you."
It's very hilarious, if anyone's interested, to listen to Paul Simon talk about mother and child reunion, because it was the...
That's a Chinese dish, right?
But yeah, but it's also the first... It was like the first reggae song to chart, and he's so proud of really terrible, like, fake patois
this
song.
Guy.
He's so awful. Okay, we have to move on.
Okay, sorry.
Eight.
Another example of the Muppet Show writing team being genius is... Number eight is the Star Wars episode. Oh. It was credited in TV Guide in Britain and in the US as being the Mark Hamill episode. This would never happen these days, even though Star Wars and the Muppets are kind of owned by the same company.
Yeah.
You'd never let them intermingle in such
such a tightly controlled brand now.
And this episode is batshit. So Mark Hamill is not meant to be the guest star. The conceit at the beginning of the episode is that Kermit has booked Angus McGonagall, the Argyle Gargling Gargoyle, and his specialty is he gargles Gershwin.
I love that.
And so the Muppet Show was also my introduction to the Great American Songbook. Like, what else do you find out about Gershwin being gargled poorly? And then who breaks through the door but Luke Skywalker and proper C-3PO and proper R2-D2, and they're looking for a lost Chewbacca. And they're like, "Hey, what? Where are we? This theater's awful. This sucks." And then somebody walks up to Luke Skywalker and says, "Oh my God, you're Mark Hamill." It's Fozzie. Mm. I love Fozzie. "You're Mark Hamill, aren't you?" And he looks really sheepish and goes, "No, that's my cousin. I'll just go get him. He's outside." Goes and grabs, you know, quick change, yeah. Comes back on, and then there's a huge storyline about how Mark Hamill can't act.
Oh my God.
Which was one of the major things leveled at him in the Star Wars films. And the Muppet Show writers are just saying, "Hey, we're working with puppets. We can get away with anything."
I mean, like, Mark Hamill genuinely has a very good sense of humor.
Yes, yes.
Is Miss Piggy Princess Leia in that episode?
Yes, and it's amazing.
Because I actually won a prize at a costume party once for dressing up as Princess Leia, but I did look a lot more like Miss Piggy Princess Leia.
I think unless you're Carrie Fisher. Show at most women dressing up.
It was a whole thing.
She is an amazing Princess Leia, and I'm pretty sure she lands a few good kisses on Mark Hamill. Muppet Show is pre-consent education. Puppets are quite touchy.
Yeah.
Which we will...
Shall we move on?
We will touch on in the direct next episode.
Seven.
Seven is Rudolf Nureyev, the incredibly talented Russian ballet dancer. Oh. So this episode aired in 1977 when relations between the US and Eastern Europe were not great. And merely the fact...
Some kind of war.
And Rudolf Nureyev even being on a Western TV show was seen as a major coup. But because he came from the very pure art form of ballet, people were fine with it. Just. It was a major thing to get across the board. This is in season two before any big stars started coming on. This is the earliest Muppet Show in my top 10. And in this episode, they treat him with such Western disdain, and he's so on board with it. He is in a towel in a sauna with Miss Piggy.
Ooh.
And the song that the Muppet Show writers get them to sing is Baby, It's Cold Outside, which
oh
is a Cold
God.
War joke. Like, I watched this as a preschooler, and as I watch it for years and years afterwards, I'm just going, they got away with murder. They got away with so much. At the height of the Cold War, having a Russian ballet dancer with a lady pig in a steam room singing "It's Baby, It's Cold Outside" while she comes onto him and tries to take his towel away from him. It's wild.
Baby, It's Cold Outside is problematic in and of itself.
Exactly. It's wild.
There may or may not exist a version of me doing that song.
It gets so bad that Rudolf Nureyev runs away from Miss Piggy and makes a man-sized hole in the brick wall of the sauna.
Beautiful. All right, are we ready for number six?
I think we are.
Okay.
Six.
Number six is far more wholesome. I've talked about how the writers...
Because it's been very dark so far.
It's been dark, but I love that about them. It's so light and happy and colourful felt and fun songs. And number six was a fan of the show who decided he loved how involved the writers were with the story of the guest star.
Yeah.
And he went, how involved will you let me get? And they went, as much as you want to be. Come on board. And so Harry Belafonte is my number six.
So we've had so many texts,
really?
Sarah.
Oh my God.
But yeah, there's definitely some people saying Harry Belafonte is their top episode.
Harry Belafonte is incredibly special because...
Did you know that... sorry, this is a slight issue, but I don't know when else I'm going to say this. Donovan, the musician Donovan, has just put out a Harry Belafonte tribute.
Wow.
It's quite upsetting.
That seems weird.
It's wrong. It's bad. Continue. Sorry. Keep going.
So Harry Belafonte really wanted to bring some of the songs from his childhood and his traditions that he had not been allowed to sing as a young performer of colour.
Yeah.
Now that he was given a platform, particularly that he knew children would be watching, he went, hey, can I bring some more of my African ancestry into this? And Jim Henson kind of went, I feel like I can't do that justice because I'll be making it out of felt. And is that offensive?
Yeah.
And so there was a huge process of trying to get things signed off, make sure people were happy with representations of massive masks of his tribal ancestry. And just, it's a beautiful, beautiful episode.
I have not seen this one and I really need to.
Fuck you, Russia, to...
Paul Simon, you're just awful.
Fuck you, Paul Simon. Fuck you, Russia. Love you, Rudolf Nureyev. To being incredibly sensitive when they were asked to by a guest that went, I appreciate what you're doing here, Jim Henson. This has power. Can I share that power with you?
Ah, felt and feeling. Should we have a song?
Yes, please.
Here's... it's still the top 10, don't worry.
Number five
is Join the Brick Throwers Union Today by Zhukov. It's 95 BFM. Back on the 95 BFM Top 10. We are in the midst of the small Top 10. It is about The Muppet Show here with Sarah. Now, Sarah, when I found out that you were not going to play any of Jim Henson's songs...
Well, they're all... Some of them are Jim Henson songs.
Well, when I found out you weren't going to play Rainbow Connection...
I am not going to play Rainbow Connection.
I thought I should play my other favourite Jim Henson song as covered by Rose Melberg from Go Sailor and stuff.
Beautiful.
Who runs a cat supply goods store now.
Which
because
is awesome.
Of course, a legendary icon of indie pop runs a cat supply store. I Don't Want to Live on the Moon by Rose Melberg. Before that, the very excellent new Zhukov track, Join the Brick Throwers Union Today. The whole EP is really good. All the songs are under 2 minutes. So we've got some really good texts.
Oh, really? Wait, what have we got?
Okay, so this is probably the most me, and so my favourite. This just says, what is felt but feeling?
Oh.
True. Very beautiful. It's like a Zen koan. Here's a quite a long one. The Muppets were brilliant. They all had crazy personality traits. Harry, the mad bomber with his nervous shakes and crazy eyes and all clammy and
crazy
sweaty.
Harry was his name?
So, I'm sorry. I'm just reading. Well, as much as a Muppet can be sweaty, Lou Zealand with his boomerang fish, Statler and Waldorf, all of them are brilliant.
Can I let you in on a secret?
Yep.
I am a puppeteer. I have been trained by a Muppeteer. It is one of the great prides of my life. And recently when the Muppets were in Wellington, I got to perform Lou Zealand.
I got to
perform the original Lou Zealand, and the irony of performing Lou Zealand in New Zealand was not lost on me. And I cried. I did a lot of crying.
That's very
it's kind
beautiful.
Of life full circle shit going on right there.
Here's one that's just a list of what they are their tops. Harry Belafonte.
Beautiful.
After that, Rita Moreno, Debbie Harry. Bunch of felty love there from Rosie. Aww.
Very good episodes there.
Muppets rule. Aw. But a lot of love for the Muppets.
And it's odd because they are... they are IP now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They are intellectual property that gets bought and sold because they obviously have a lot of power and a lot of nostalgia value.
But I mean, it only got better with Muppet Babies, didn't it?
It's kind of like every...
Oh my goodness, the disdain.
Everything
I felt
that
in that moment
has a different period of joy for a different audience.
Well, a very diplomatic response there. Let's do number five and go for your period of joy.
All right.
Five.
That's Lachlan again. So my number five.
It's all Lachlan.
It's Lachlan all the time.
All the way down.
Is from the fourth season of The Muppets. And it is
later on.
Liza Minnelli. So Liza Minnelli is another example of the writer's table going, how much fun can we have with a guest who is so match fit in every aspect of being in film, TV, theatre, song. Liza can obviously do it all. So they went,
at least a triple threat.
Yeah, at least. How full on do you want to go? And she went, you write it, I'll do it. You know what I can do. Surprise
me.
Oh my
God.
And so the episode they wrote for her is, they don't even have the original credits. Liza O'Shaughnessy turns up and hires Kermit the Frog as a private detective.
Oh.
And she says, I'm in trouble. I think I'm being stalked by a killer. I think he's part of the theater production I'm in. So it's a film noir episode of The Muppet Show.
Gorgeous.
And it features Copacabana. It features A Quiet Thing. It features Everything's Coming Up Roses. But also one of the things you can do with puppets that you definitely can't do with a human cast is extreme violence.
Yes.
So you can have a film noir and you can have a scene in which there's a cast of characters that are getting taken out by a weapon, and for some reason it's nowhere near as disturbing as it would be were they human beings.
Well, because the son of Henson tried to do a similar thing, but with a film.
He tried to. And it's interesting because one of the first things Jim Henson ever did was a movie called Muppets, Sex and Violence.
Yeah.
And that really didn't fly either. Like, he found his good middle ground, and it took him years. Like, he was using Ralph the dog in commercials. Like, it took him a long time to find this beautiful sweet spot. And yes, so his son Brian Henson did have a film recently called The Happy Time Murders.
Yes.
In which puppets jizz on things.
Yeah, I was going to say, heard there was a lot of jizz, so I didn't go.
Yeah, no. there's a Flix writer that likes using the term jizz a lot in his reviews, but each to their own. But the Liza Minnelli episode is beautiful. So it takes all of her abilities as a Broadway performer and as a film performer and just uses it to such great degree. Another example of a performer playing themselves and a character within the episode. And it's just wonderful.
Oh, gorgeous. Should we do number four?
We should definitely do number four.
Four.
Such a voice. Sorry.
So number four, I realized, and this was not on purpose, my top five are all female guests. This was not on purpose.
I don't think anyone would have noticed if you hadn't drawn attention to it, Sarah.
The reason I bring it up is because I originally watched all of these episodes at a preschool age.
Yes.
And I think the female celebrities on these episodes really informed my idea of what being a female star, if not purely just a successful woman, was.
Yes.
And so they had a lot of very incredibly beautiful, successful women. But one thing I will always love The Muppet Show for is if they were known for being beautiful, they would put them in a situation where they'd be head-to-head with Miss Piggy, arguing over A, who was the hottest, B, who was the best star, C, who was the best feminist. And that
beautiful.
Was a very weird thing to be taking in as a four-year-old when tapes of The Muppets are your surrogate babysitter.
Yeah.
So I'm going to play for you now a clip of Miss Piggy and Raquel Welch.
Sorry, Raquel Welch?
Raquel Welch, God-created woman, performing WOMAN and trying to outdo each other as who is the most successful embodiment of woman. And the thing I later realized, in particular with The Muppet Show, is a lot of the characters who were female weren't always played by female performers, and a lot of the characters who were male weren't always played by male performers. So it was a real, I don't know, I love The Muppets, what can I say?
And now, once again, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for our wonderful and indescribable fantastic guest star. Is she ready yet?
Oh,
Raquel.
Oh, yeah.
What is it about Raquel Welch?
Also, I must say, they are both wearing tuxedos. I later wore a tuxedo to my school ball. I probably have this to blame.
I
can wash out 44 pairs of socks and have them hanging out on the line. I can starch an iron 2 dozen shirts before you can count them on.
Well, I can scoop up a great big dipper full of lard from the drippings can. Throw it in the skillet, go out and do my shopping, and be back to Fort Matt's in that pan.
Cause I'm woman. W-O-M-A-N. Like to say it again. I can rub and scrub this house till it's shining just like a dime.
Feed the baby, grease the car, and powder my face all at the same time.
Get all dressed up, go out and swing till 4 a.m. and then lay down at 5, jump up at 6 and start all over again. Cause I'm a woman.
Also, the fantastic thing about that is it's very very obvious in the episode that all of the very domestic things they're talking about, neither woman would be doing that song.
Yeah, grease the car.
Yeah, and like they're talking about using a deep fryer and stuff, and it's like you are being so performative in your womanhood right now, but it's still a fight, it's still a game, to the point where it almost becomes aggressive. Like so much of my ideas of what femaledom and womanhood is unfortunately formed by the Muppets. World.
I mean, it's really interesting because I got slightly obsessed with Raquel Welch after seeing Myra Breckinridge, because there's not a lot of representation out there.
Yeah.
That's quite a niche joke for people. Raquel Welch fought really hard and quite unsuccessfully to be taken for anything other than a giant sex woman.
Totally.
And so it must have been really liberating for her to be able to go on The Muppet Show and take the piss out of that.
Absolutely.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. All right, number three.
Number three is Debbie Harry, who I believe a texter mentioned. Debbie Harry comes on The Muppet Show and is very sweet and very taken with all of the Muppets. And all of a sudden, a scout group turn up. And the entire scout group are comprised of frogs and lizards. And the scout mother is explaining to everybody at the Muppet Theatre, who are like, I'm very sorry, we have a job to do, you need to leave. The scout mother explains, oh, I'm sorry, these reptiles are all here to earn their punk rock merit badges. And Debbie Harry is going to teach them how to be punk rockers. And Debbie Harry's like, I mean, sure, why not? And so she and the Muppet House Band, it was slightly different from the normal Muppet House Band, a lot more kind of safety pins and things hanging off
beasts.
Teach a lot of very young frogs how to be punk rockers in the cutest way possible. Just always taking a thing that the person is known for and turning it on its head in a really lovely, accessible way.
Aw, love Debbie Harry. She seems nice.
She seems lovely.
All right.
Two is Glenda Jackson, who may not be known to a lot of listeners, but is a huge figure in British theatre and kind of British National Theatre acting, who would have been early on in the guest star roster, but really took to a very young Sarah because she said to the scriptwriters, do whatever you want. And they went, well, what are
like
you...
Like your BFM.
Yeah, like my BFM. What are you into? And she was like, I don't know, write me something crazy. She's, you know, she's playing Lady Macbeth. She's doing this in her day job. She was
beautiful.
Like, write me something. Big, big bossy woman. And so they went, okay, hold my beer. They suggested that she had magical powers to the point where the Muppet Theatre then turned into a pirate ship. And she turned up and took over the Muppet Theatre as a female pirate.
Oh!
And it's amazing. Yes. It's hard to explain. Apparently, when I was very young and my childhood friends wanted to have Halloween parties, I would insist on being dressed as Glenda Jackson on The Muppet Show.
That's
as
incredible.
A female pirate.
This is another one of the ones that I had on just to make it all about me for a second.
Do it.
This is another one of the ones that I had on video, but I never knew that she was famous. I just assumed that she was like a pirate or something. I was like, well, these ones have, you know, they do that a thing that woman. They're famous for, but she just is a pirate. I guess she's a pirate. Like,
she wanted to take over something. They allowed her to take over Muppet Theatre, but she had to do it as a female pirate. I don't know. You have to watch it to make sense of it.
It's pirates were big in the 70s.
It's great.
Does that mean we're ready for number
one?
We're
at number one.
Do you want to do a quick recap just to build up a little bit of tension?
Holy maracas. Okay.
Number 10.
So at number 10, we had Lou Rawls. At number 9, we had Paul Simon getting made fun of, and I'm not sure he was aware he was getting made fun of. At number 8, we had the Mark Hamill / Star Wars episode, which for any Star Wars fan out there, if you haven't seen it, do it. It also gave me great joy when, for the rest of my life, a lot of men explained Star Wars to me at parties. And in my head, I'm just going, you don't know the best bit.
How do you even explain stuff? Like, I have also experienced this, but like, how is... Anyway.
Especially in a modern thing where you're like, you can't have a female protagonist in Star Wars. And I'm like, well, they had Muppet protagonists in Star Wars for a little bit of the canon. So anyway, I digress. Number 7, Rudolf Nureyev in one of the greatest early tricks the show pulled. Quite politically ill-advised, but it stands as a great pun-filled episode.
Like Madonna at Eurovision.
Exactly. Number 6, Harry Belafonte taking the piss and just a really heartfelt, beautiful episode exploring something that the guest star wanted to do. 5, Liza Minnelli at the height of her powers. 4, Raquel Welch being the hottest feminist you've ever seen in your life. They can coexist. 3,
evidence, proof right here.
3, Debbie.
Fellas.
Sorry. Debbie Harry teaching very young frogs how to get their punk rock merit badges. 2, Glenda Jackson being an amazing female pirate taking over the ship Muppet Theatre.
What?
And
wait, I'm gonna read it. We got one more text.
Oh, good. Okay.
So this is from, should I say who it is? It's a volley. I'll say their name.
Sure.
There's a lot of people called this. It's from Jono. Jono said that that his first crush was the result of Disney great Sandy Duncan's appearance on The Muppet Show. She was in a dive bar singing and dancing a song called What's a Nice Girl Like Me Doing in a Place That Never Closes?
They create young brains. The writers team on The Muppets, I swear to God. I have taken up enough of Amelia's wonderful show. Okay. My number one.
Juan.
My number one. And as you may imagine, the amount I rant on about this, my number 10 is very interchangeable. But at the moment, I haven't been able to stop rewatching the Gladys Knight episode.
Aww.
She is so wonderful, so lovely. She is without her pips, but the Muppet Workshop create a backing vocalist band for her.
Wonderful.
And in the clip I'm about to play for you now, she is surrounded by anthropomorphic grapes.
Good.
You can probably guess the song she's singing. She heard it through the literal grapevine.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think the wind is about to die down here. Here she is with one of her greatest hits, a lady who can sing up a storm and may have to sing in one, this Gladys Knight!
How I know. Baby, 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 about your plans to make me blue. With some other girl you knew before. Between the two of us girls, you know I loved you more. It took me by surprise, I must say. Losing you
A satisfying and justified ranking of that thing. The 95 BFM Small Top 10.